So to start with, I want to add a few more general comments about these columns and then talk about the first of the five. And the first general comment is to remind you that I'm doing a fairly extreme abstraction in order to give a what I hope is a simple description of the meaning of each one. And if you look at how to grow lotus blossom and you look at various places in which each of them is mentioned, you'll see that there's a tremendous amount of meaning for each one. And it still is something which is essentially come down to something quite simple and direct and part of our everyday spiritual experience if we're really doing training, or let's say something that can be readily connected with our everyday experience, which is what I'm trying to do here. Like all very, very profound things, there's something essentially simple. It can't be broken down into component parts. There's something essentially simple with each one. And at the same time, each one has an incredible wealth of meaning. And these things don't stand against one another. Also, if you try to bring your brain to this, it's just not going to get it. You've got to bring your heart to it. And the parts that aren't too comprehensible, one has to be willing to put on the back burner and not try to force the brain to do what it's not ready to do because there simply isn't enough experience yet of what's being talked about. This is about something that's spiritually hardwired into us, about something of our spiritual makeup, and this is the deepest. This teaching is the deepest teaching I know of. The roots of it go right down to the Buddha nature. And I've always viewed this teaching that came out of our master's third Kensho. I've always viewed it as this incredible gift from the Eternal to our Sangha, to her Master, and to each of us who are her followers, her disciples and her followers, that came through this one particular vehicle, her Master, to you, but that's really our birthright of each of us that we can realize in our own experience. And that didn't originate with her. It didn't originate with anyone. It just continually finds new expression in the living experience of human beings. So at one time it's the Four Noble Truths, another time it's the five ranks, another time it's the five columns, and another time it's the five aspects of meditation, and another time it's this, another time it's that, and it's always the same. Because it's always deriving from the same eternal truth that we all share in. And it is the birthright of each of us. The reason for the contemplative life is to be one with that truth in intention and in experience. But it's certainly not the purpose of the contemplative life to think of it as something so ethereal that it's unattainable or unrealizable. Reverend Master never taught anything that she wasn't fully confident that others would experience in their own way. And she never wavered in that confidence. Her trust in others was as great as her trust in herself, and her trust in herself was very great indeed. There's aspects of this that River Master did not talk about in Lotus Blossom or elsewhere, and that I have some degree of awareness of, and that I'm not talking about in this particular set of talks, that I do talk about more with my monastic disciples, and especially my more senior monastic disciples, with some of my fellow seniors, and at retreats that are mainly directed for my lay disciples. I talk about some other aspects of these things, but for the sake of these talks, I'm not going into some of that. But like I say, there's an incredible wealth of teaching here, a whole world of teaching here. And a world of wonders that unfold, a world of wonders that unfold. So my next little drawing, which is not a great work of art, but has an element of spontaneity in it. You can appreciate that, can't you? This is the first of the five columns. And it shows us, each of the five columns, I've delineated them in black because I thought of doing it in yellow because they're columns of light, right? The way they're experienced by our method are columns of light. But you're not going to be able to see the yellow if I didn't define it. So I've defined it in black. But here's a column with light. And it shows the kind of up at the top. It shows the black clouds with the light streaming out. And I'll just read something the River Master said about this in Lotus Blossom. And I mean, this is so beautiful. It just could make you weep. It's so beautiful. I go up the first column of light and realize that it is the one that comes from the black clouds in the sky that I saw before my ordination. Although I am going towards the tiny spot in the blackness, it always remains light. The emanation of the cosmic Buddha comes over from the bright columns to enter the one that I am in just above me, and I understand that this is how earth penetrates heaven. Remember what I said about earth and heaven. The karma penetrating heaven, meaning the saturation of the karmic blocks and jangles with the water of the spirit and with the compassion of the eternal and the illumination of enlightenment. No matter how great the darkness, there is still light to be found therein by those who truly look. In the darkest place, even on the side of the black lotus, in the blackest, darkest place, it is to be found the true teaching that saved me from despair. Nothing matters. Nothing matters, meaning let go of clinging to external things. Just let go. Fall into the seeming blackness of the void, and at the same time look up. Don't worry about external things. Just let go and look up and trust. And you'll find that you'll float there in emptiness. You won't just be destroyed, which is what people are so terrified of. They'll fall into the void and go mad or be destroyed. Fall into the void, do free fall. Let yourself just fall, let go, and live. And there, right in the midst of this incredible darkness, there's this incredible brightness at the same time. One can jump into hell. This is Rim Master speaking now, not me. One can jump into hell so long as one is looking up. This is Dogen's death poem was along those lines, if you remember. I don't remember the exact words. Before his death, he wrote a poem about that. At all times, the Buddha is appearing in hell and in this world, in all realms, in all states of mind and body. At all times, the Buddha is appearing. Within all light is darkness, but explained it cannot be by darkness that one-sided is alone. In darkness, there is light, But here again, by light one-sided is not explained. The Sanokai speaks the truth. And that's as beautiful a description, you know. You know, where I should just stop the talk here, but I'll talk a little more. And I actually do have something to say, because this corresponds to the teaching I was given in 98 about asking for help. That's this first column. And I just want to talk a little bit from my own experience about how I've learned that that works. I've told this story before, but Rin Master talked constantly about asking for help. You know, particularly after 76 and thereafter, she talked constantly about asking for help. It's a funny thing that at a certain point I kind of quit trying. And in a way, I think it was because I simply was aware that there was something missing in the way I tried to do it. And it's the simplest thing in the world. It's the simplest thing in the world. I didn't know how to ask for help and just leave it in the hands of the Eternal. I didn't know how to ask for help and not in some way interject something of me in it. There's something I thought, there's some expectation. And there was a particular expectation I had, like, that if I asked for help somehow, then I had to kind of be able to get a response somehow. And it was all, in my mind, it was all kind of externalized. I didn't realize what an utterly natural act it is, just, and how much it was actually happening in my when I meditated, I would experience that kind of opening in the chest, you know, that kind of opening up and up, out and upwards it happens, which is what really happens when you ask for help. Your heart opens, you know, not just the metaphorical heart, but the actual heart. The acceptance, non-acceptance organ actually opens. And, you know, I mean, that's a metaphorical, but, you know, something happens there, and you can feel it in I feel it in the area of the chest when this happens. And I didn't realize that's the asking for help. And so in the last 10 years, since my experience in 98, 99, I've learned to more consciously ask for help, and at the same time, not ask for help with any expectation in it or with any concern at all about getting an answer. Just, it's enough to ask for help and to leave then the need in the hands of the Eternal. And that, it was such a simple thing. You kind of think, oh, this guy had been training for all these years and didn't get that. I mean, I think that about myself. How could you do all that, you know, be a monk for so many years and just not get something so simple? The truth of the matter is that, you know, there's me and there's what I'm lugging karmically. And what I'm lugging karmically ain't so swift. You know, I might not be so swift too, but, you know, some lumps are really don't get it. And where does that not getting it come from? It's from the depth of the self-judgment that was inherited. The depth of the sense of unworthiness. You know, how can I not get it? The answer is because I'm not just me. I'm a whole bag of stuff. And there's stuff in me that don't get it till it gets it. And it takes it a long time, some of it. And still, I can go to an altar. I can go at any time. I can pause in my daily life. At any time I can pause and I can look up into those black clouds, metaphorically speaking. And there is that little light there. That inextinguishable light of faith that knows that no matter how dark it is, it's more than it knows, it is. That light is, and we're part of it. This is something we just learn through experience. We learn it through experience. And it's something that is, again, to use kind of computer-ese, you know, the experience part is the kind of programming, but the actual fact that we have the Buddha nature is the hardwiring. And it's not something that we learn through experience. It's also hardwired into us because we all have the Buddha nature. We're all part of the eternal. And nothing we can ever do can destroy that fact. You never destroy your Buddha nature. No action can destroy Buddha nature. We can only blind ourselves to it. And any time, no matter what we've done, no matter what has happened in the past, any time with a naive and childlike, not childish, a childlike faith, we turn and look up. There it is again. There's that little light, and it pierces through the darkness. When Rinpoche Master speaks of the darkness, the black clouds, you know, just before ordination, well, I'm sure that's the classic thing that happens every time before you take a major spiritual step. There's that wall of fear and despair. There's that, there it is, that wall of fear, you know. Every time before you take a step, not just a major step, but any significant spiritual step, that you, there's always that, you know, you're leaving the known, going into the unknown. There's always going to be that for each of us to some degree or other. Because there's always more that is not known than that is known. And rather than trying to fill the void with being a know-it-all, or being super competent, or being the one in charge, what we need to do is relax into that unknowing and live in that place. And the fact that we don't know, let that remind us of our needs so that then we turn to the eternal. Here's the other thing, and I'll just again tell this on myself. The other thing about me was that I was too swollen-headed to realize how much I needed to pause and ask for help, and too impulsive to remember so often how much I needed to do so. And I'll say that in the last 10 years, every single time I've come to a decision of any importance and I have failed to stop and ask and really listen and be patient, I have really paid for it afterwards. And every time that I have remembered to stop and ask, even if there's been some little hell open up afterwards, it still worked out good in the long run. It still worked out. And I've had times, many times, when I've asked for help, and it's still been messy. And yet I've known I prefer this mess that's happening right now, having got off on the right foot, to not being a mess and having not remembered to ask, because in the longer run it would have been a mess and a much more serious mess. Whenever you teach about really contemplative religion, the words always get in the way. So I have to say, asking for help is more than what any of us can think about what asking for help is. Rinpoche Master would often talk about looking up, how important it is to look up. And looking up is the same thing. And you know, we're stuck with words to try to describe this essential spiritual act. But please understand that this essential spiritual act that I'm talking about is an essential part of this column. Remember that each column has the heavens pole and the earth pole. When we speak of the light streaming through the dark clouds, we're speaking of the heaven pole. The light comes from the eternal. When we speak of our own turning towards that light, out of the sense of our need and out of the faith that that light is there, we're speaking of the earth pole then. And both poles are part of each column. It's one unity with two distinguishable poles. It's one of the wonderful things about this teaching. Think of how different that is from the idea about our relationship to God that some of us were raised with, where God and you are actually separate. In this teaching, it's one unity. We are part of God, and we are separate, as I spoke about yesterday. The Eternal will not do our training for us, and our life and our training are never conducted in the absence of Buddha nature. Training is really just the activity of Buddha nature manifesting through the earth pole. I suppose what I hope in talking so much about asking for help, as Rim Master must have hoped, is that if I throw enough mud, some might stick. And that people will gradually find for themselves the enormous refuge that is available to you at all times and in all situations. And there's so many things, so many problems in life, if you encounter them without knowing that you can ask for help, it's so different, so utterly different than if you encounter it knowing that you can ask for help. So utterly different. I also want to say at the last thing to this talk that you have to remember that I'm speaking for people who are doing formal meditation as a practice, as a regular practice, and for whom meditation is the essential spiritual act around which your whole religious life revolves. And that if you try to divorce what I'm saying from the essential spiritual act of meditation, this makes a lot less sense and tends to be much more an externalized point of view then. The asking inevitably will turn more into like telephoning God kind of thing. Rather than the heart rising to its refuge, you see. So our meditation is where we really unleash it all towards the eternal. And yet in no way is this just limited to a particular form of meditation or a particular physical context. We can do this anytime, anywhere. The capacity is hardwired into us. We have the Buddha nature. That seed of faith within each of us is inextinguishable. There to be accessed whenever we choose. And again, as I said yesterday, the Eternal does not force anything on us. We have to choose it. The Eternal has already chosen us. Rim Master used to say, before we ever longed for the Eternal longed for us. The Eternal has already chosen us. And it loves, this infinite love loves it so much that it will not force itself on the beloved. It waits for us. whenever we turn towards it, there it is. There it is. No matter how dark the clouds may be, there it is. Defense.